the global issues very, very clearly, and my presentation follows to provide a very specific example from malaria, even more focused, not just addressing all of malaria, but more focused on the malaria and pregnancy issues that Jean highlighted. So I'm going to talk a little bit about this, I'm going to skip the first two slides because Anne covered the global burden of disease in terms of the maternal mortality. We all know that it's a huge issue, huge problem, still continuing. And these are estimates from 2008, and more recent estimates may show us that it's declined somewhat, but we still feel it's a huge mortality burden that women face in this world. And then the childhood mortality as well. And both, as you know, and you saw from Anne's presentation and from your own work, have an impact based on the malaria burden of disease in terms of what it has an impact on the maternal and childhood mortality. So just a few facts about malaria and pregnancy. Up to 10,000 pregnant women and 200,000 infants annually die from malaria. It's more frequent and complicated during pregnancy. That's why it's an issue that we want to really address and manage and prevent. In malaria endemic areas, mostly sub-Saharan Africa that you saw in some parts of Asia and the Amazon, malaria during pregnancy accounts for up to 15% of maternal anemia, 8 to 14% of low birth weight in infants, 30% of preventable low birth weight, and 3 to 8% of infant death. And as you saw from Anne's graph, where you saw the proportionate increase in newborn mortality, much of that newborn mortality is coming from the low birth weight. So low birth weight accounts for a huge proportion of newborn mortality, and we see that there's all of these issues are increased as a relation with the malaria and pregnancy. Many countries have come together under the Rollback Malaria Initiative, the President's Malaria Initiative, which is a U.S. government-led initiative, and have set targets that they want to achieve in terms of addressing malaria. And for malaria and pregnancy, the targets of 80% and 85%, depending on whether it's rollback malaria or PMI. And there are three components of malaria and pregnancy. One is intermittent preventive treatment for pregnant women. These are two doses of IPTP, and then using long-lasting insecticide-treated nets during pregnancy for the mother and the newborn, and the case management of malaria and pregnancy. If the woman does have malaria during her pregnancy, then the facilities need to have the ability to treat that malaria so that they don't have the impact of the stillbirths and the other ill effects that Anne mentioned. Yet if you look at the coverage gaps, and this is what is so frustrating and revealing at this point, this is a graph from the Countdown 2015. This is 2010, so it may be slightly older data. They haven't done a revised one yet, I think. They plan to do one next year, maybe. But it shows the median national coverage level for 19 countdown interventions, and these are 64 countdown countries. So it's a very aggregate figure. But if you see the IPTP for malaria, which is the third figure, it's 8. If you see the children sleeping under a bed net, it's 11. And the malaria treatment is 30. So you see that one of the lowest performing interventions amongst all the interventions in the countdown indicators that are measured are the ones for malaria. Just to be a little bit more specific, since that was such aggregate data, I wanted to show you some country-level data. This is from the WHO report 2010 on malaria. In 8 countries, so if you look at, there's a whole range. In Angola, it's less than 10%, going up to 60% in Zambia for the women, all the pregnant women receiving the second dose of IPTP during pregnancy. And even amongst the best performing countries like Zambia, which we use as an example for malaria and pregnancy, we see that they've still only managed to reach 60%. So it's a huge gap, a coverage gap that we are faced with. And it's not just from the SP dosage that the women need to get, but it's also for the long-lasting nets. And the challenges that possibly account for some of these coverage gaps, one is that it's not prioritized at the country level. It's just considered as part of something that the Reproductive Health Service Delivery Group will do. There was also a shift in the medication that was required for malaria and pregnancy versus what was going to be used for case management of malaria, as the chloroquine and SP went, most of the malaria was resistant to that. So I think that many countries initially, while they changed their policies to add SP as the treatment or the preventive treatment for malaria in during pregnancy, they did not actually acquire or make sure that it was available in the antenatal care supply chain. So we need to have harmonized malaria and pregnancy policies, guidelines, and the joint programming between the Reproductive Health Group and the National Malaria Control Program. And from my perspective, as I sit on the malaria and pregnancy chair of the RBM task force, one of the things that I notice is that most of the discussions happen with the malaria control programs. Most of the funding decisions happen with the malaria control program, whereas the service delivery platform is housed within the reproductive health service delivery system. And they're not usually included or engaged in the dialogue as much as they should be. And I'll talk a little bit about that as I go forward. The focus is on the availability and the distribution of the SP for IPTP and the capacity building of the providers, making sure that they are trained and able, oriented to provide. But what we don't see, what there's a gap in that we don't see, the continuum of care, the health system strengthening element that is so important for providing integrated services, is not the one that is emphasized as part of this funding. So it's a very specific element that is looked at from the malaria control program perspective, but it's yet not something that will look at the distribution, the logistics, making sure it's available at all levels. I think the other aspect is that communities need to be engaged at an earlier level, at a much higher level. We see that many women come in for antenatal care visits at a much higher level, a higher rate, but they come in much later, so they're unable to receive their two doses. So if communities were engaged and worked with to make sure that they talk to women, counsel women about coming in earlier, then we would see that we might be able to provide them with the full two doses. And then again, the indicators in how malaria and pregnancy is measured is also something that needs to have a good understanding at all levels. So one of the challenges that I mentioned, that women attend antenatal care late, delaying access to malaria prevention services, not sleeping under the bed net until much later. And then some of the SP concerns that we have noted, as part of the MCHIP program, we work in several sub-Saharan African countries working on malaria and pregnancy, and we still see that there are stockouts of SP. Despite the fact that it's part of the list, it is part of the guidelines, it's not there in the system. It's not there at the antenatal care clinics. And where in a country like Tanzania, where we've actually studied the two sites where we've made sure that there are no stockouts, there's a huge difference in the uptake of IPTP2 compared to the ones where the stockouts continue. So we know that if we address the stockouts, those things will be provided to women. There's also this confusion around SP because it is considered as a drug which is not to be used for case management of malaria, but it is yet the drug of choice recommended by WHO for intermittent preventive treatment for women during pregnancy. So sometimes it's countries may have discarded it as something that is not to be procured for antenatal care clinics. The other challenge I think that remains is that if a long-term challenge is if this drug also becomes something that we cannot use during pregnancy, then we don't have an alternate at this point. So I feel that, you know, what Anne laid out in terms of the integration platform, in terms of looking at the target population, who we are serving, the opportunities we have, and when we serve them, integrating malaria prevention and control services into this platform makes a lot of sense in reaching the pregnant women and children. Majority, like over 70% of women, attend at least one antenatal care. And even if you look at two-plus antenatal care visits, many, many women in Africa do make that visit. And it's an opportune setting to provide the malaria and pregnancy prevention services with comprehensive maternal care. Reaching children at the community level through the community case management of malaria also is another opportunity for us to reduce childhood mortality related to malaria. So I think in summary, I would like to say that malaria and pregnancy can be addressed on the MNCH platform, but we still find that the long-lasting insecticide-treated net use and IPTP use is still very low. Countries in Africa need to support and to ensure the SP availability, close collaboration of reproductive health and national malaria control programs is absolutely essential. And more funding requests through the Global Fund, and I'm hoping that Akram is going to talk a little bit more about the process and how it can be happening, it can happen. We do see that there's a lot of, you know, this is just a picture from Malawi where a community member is escorting a pregnant woman to an ANC visit. So just to reflect that these visits do happen, we need to make better use of them. So in terms of recommendations, it is making sure that the right groups are at the table. I mentioned that, you know, the people who get the funding, who have the dialogue with the Global Fund, who have the dialogue with the RBM group, is the malaria group. And the ones that are responsible for providing services is the reproductive health group. And so those groups need to be talking to each other and work in partnership on this issue. They should be included, the RMs, the malaria, the CCM groups, which are mandated to make sure that the Global Fund grant is implemented at the country level, should include the reproductive health and maternal and newborn and child health experts as part of the group so that they can make sure that these elements are looked at. The other thing is to make sure that we have simple guidelines available to the countries so that they can review them and make sure what do they need to include in their grants proposal so that they can get this funding. There are some countries, and I'm hoping Akram will give a few examples. There are some countries that have done this really successfully in Africa. Ethiopia is one of them, where they took a very broad integrated approach to addressing maternal, newborn, and child health through their Global Fund grant. And these country examples would be a real help to other countries who might be seeking Global Fund applications. I do already see a big change in the dialogue that's happening through the Global Fund and the Malaria and Pregnancy Working Group. We have now malaria MNCH experts who are from WHO and other partners who are now sitting in these Global Fund regional meetings talking about the guidance that is available, how countries can include this in their Global Fund applications. And also, as a result of that, there's training being provided to a pool of consultants to assist countries in writing up plan grant applications. So I think that there's a lot happening. It's still something that we really need to work on and emphasize and work at the country level. There are many resources that are available. The MCHIP program has done 3 case studies to show some of the positive lessons learned from countries like Zambia and Malawi that have reached certain levels of IPTP. There needs to be more collaboration among country-level stakeholders, and they should review the MIP program successes, challenges, and recommendations. And, you know, we've seen that MIP is the least funded element of all the malaria components in the Global Fund and at US and the President's Malaria Initiative. And we need to make sure that that's not doesn't happen because we know that the women and the children need the services. They suffer a huge burden as a result of malaria. And we have low-cost interventions that can prevent that. Thank you.
Just a personal note about why I'm almost evangelical on this topic. Early in my career, I spent 6 months working in Somalia, in a refugee camp, that a nomadic population that normally didn't get malaria, so they had no natural immunity, and they all came together on the banks of a river, and after rainy season we had a malaria epidemic. And in a population of about 10,000, we had 280 deaths in 2 weeks. 82% of them were in children under five, and the others were in pregnant women. And I would personally saw two women die from birth to stillborn babies and then die from malaria. And I had a six-month-old baby girl die in my hands from malaria. And I will never forget those women and children, and that's why I'm here. And I could just as easily have put a malaria panel, because I'm very active in the malaria group, but it's just like talking to a wall about this shortfall. And we've got to make that, we've got to do something about that, folks. I know many people in the audience, and we talk, afterwards we'll go out in the hall and talk a little bit more about next steps, but that's why this is a particular issue, that here it is a Global Fund disease for which Global Fund is allowed, and it's not happening. So I'll leave it at that, because our next speaker is going to pull it all together and tell us what we need to do next.